included quite a bit of information in the briefing book for you on this issue. So I'm trying to keep the presentation short, but I can expand on anything that you would like during questions and discussion. So I'm presenting a proposal for an omnibus baseline simplification amendment. To give you a little background, most Northeast limited access fisheries have vessel upgrade restrictions. A replacement vessel or upgrade made to an existing vessel must be within 10% of the size, which means length, net tonnage, and gross tonnage, and 20% of the horsepower of the permit's baseline vessel. A permit holder may upgrade these only once over the lifetime of the permit, and if the entire upgrade is not used, the new size and horsepower become the permit's maximum. So the purpose of these measures were originally to limit increases in harvest capacity of the fleet. For example, if a vessel were to land more fish per day at sea because of increased size, it could undermine the purpose of days at sea to limit mortality. In a quota system, an upgrade could increase a vessel's catch rates, accelerating the rate at which the quota is taken. However, since upgrade restrictions were first adopted, many fisheries have implemented other effort controls and annual catch limits which otherwise restrict total harvest. Meanwhile, these upgrade restrictions have become an administrative burden to the industry and to NIMS. These restrictions complicate and prolong the vessel replacement process and put a cost burden on permit holders who have to obtain documentation to prove that a vessel falls within a permit's upgrade restrictions. NIMS staff put a significant amount of time into researching a permit's history to determine its baseline and whether its one-time upgrade has been used. Some vessels have multiple baselines, which can be confusing for permit holders and those wishing to buy permits. In light of the newer controls on fishing mortality, it may be possible to simplify upgrade restrictions without compromising conservation and fleet diversity goals. So toward this end, the Northeast Regional Coordinating Committee, the NRCC, formed a working group in 2011 comprised of staff from the Northeast Regional Office, the Science Center, the Mid-Atlantic Council, New England Council, and ASMFC to explore modifications to vessel upgrade restrictions. That working group completed a white paper which recommended 5 suggested modifications and publication of an advance notice of proposed rulemaking. The white paper is included in your briefing book. The 5 work group suggestions that were published in the ANPR to spark discussion were eliminating the tonnages from the baseline restrictions, eliminating the one-time upgrade restriction, changing to a system of size classes within which a vessel could move, removing the baseline upgrade restrictions for vessels under 30 feet, and complete removal of upgrade restrictions. The ANPR was published on October 5, 2011, and collected public comments through December 5th. We received a total of 35 comments that ranged the full spectrum from supporting no change to the restrictions to eliminating them entirely and everything in between. Some commenters supported specific measures. Others opposed specific measures. Some commenters provided their own suggestions. And some commenters did not support any changes to the vessel upgrade restrictions out of concern that it would lead to increased capacity or consolidation of the fleet. There should be a summary of comments in your briefing book as well. So after review of the public comments and further discussion with the NRCC, we came up with a proposal for an omnibus amendment that would simplify the upgrade restrictions of all Northeast fisheries. If both councils support this action, NERA would take the lead on developing an amendment in consultation with the councils and the ASMFC to be adopted by the councils at a later date. We presented this proposal to the NRCC at their fall 2012 meeting, and they gave us the okay to bring it to you here today. And I made the same presentation for the Mid-Atlantic Council last month. We are proposing to include these 2 alternatives because they are the least complicated and controversial and would give you the most bang for your buck. We're proposing that it would include eliminating the gross and net tonnage specifications from baseline restrictions. Because these are the most variable and costly to document, we believe this change can be made with negligible impact to harvest capacity because it leaves in place length and horsepower, which do more to limit capacity and maintain fleet diversity. They would also leave in place the volumetric limits, which were recently implemented for the Atlantic mackerel fishery. Second, we would propose removing the one-time upgrade limit on vessel upgrades. So vessels would still be restricted to sustain within 10% of size and 20% of their baseline horsepower, but could take as many upgrades to get there as they would like. This would provide more flexibility and fairness for people who, for whatever reason, were not able to maximize their one-time upgrade when they upgraded their vessel. It would also substantially streamline the replacement process while having negligible impact to harvest capacity. So the process and timeline we're proposing to follow, I'm presenting the plan to you here today in the Mid-Atlantic last month. This fall, we would work on gathering input from species committees. Over the winter, we would work on analyzing alternatives and drafting the amendment document. Between March and April of 2014, we would present the draft amendment to the species committees for their input and review. At the April 2014 council meetings, we would present the draft amendment to the councils for adoption. And at the June 2014 council meetings, we would hold public hearings in conjunction with the meetings. Then in August and September council meetings, we would get final council approval of the amendment document. And between September 2014 and February 2015, we would work on proposed and final rulemaking with the intent that the new rules would be effective with the 2015 permit year, which would be May 1st, 2015. So the specific questions I have for you today are those on the slide there. If you support the proposal, would you wish the species committees to provide input to the amendment, and then which ones? If a species committee meeting isn't scheduled, would you like to schedule a meeting or get this on the agenda for a meeting or schedule a meeting to discuss this, and how we should propose changes be reconciled between the two councils if any differences appear. So that's my presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. We have some logistical issues with the timing that Tom is going to address.
Hey, assuming the I don't know, Karen, if you can put the slide back up that showed the timing. I guess my concern is that several of our committees, in particular groundfish, scallops, perhaps monkfish, maybe skates, are going to be extremely busy in October and November trying to get documents ready for final action in November. I think we really can't expect that those committees are going to have times on their agendas to spend any really significant amount of time on this issue. And in particular, groundfish and scallops, maybe a couple of the committees that are going to be really interested in this issue. The other thing is the November council meeting, I was going to wait and make an announcement later. We're already considering making it longer than a three-day meeting because of the omnibus habitat amendment and the herring issues and priorities discussions. I'm really skeptical that we will have time available on that agenda, but we'll take a closer look at it as we work on it.
This meeting may run into the number.
Terry.
So I was thinking about the horsepower restrictions and how we buy engines and stuff nowadays compared to what they were. And horsepower today doesn't mean the same thing as horsepower in 1990. Weight of the engine ratio and stuff. Now the engines are all disposable and they're all high horsepower and, they fall apart easily. So, I mean, I think we should try to figure out a way to remove the horsepower restrictions on this, but yet not limit it to old style horsepower, if you know what I mean. I mean, not remove it completely, but allow the upgrade to be higher than what we have now, because an engine nowadays isn't the same thing as an engine was when we developed those rules. And we can't even replace the engines that we have nowadays with engines that will meet the EPA standards and stuff. So I think that really needs to be looked at seriously. So,
Tom?
Just following up on that, I want to say I agree with Terry, and I think that's why a committee-level discussion. I agree with Terry.
I heard that.
Yeah, I'll just stop there. I did want to say the GAP discussed this and passed a motion 701 to support this proposal regarding vessel upgrade restrictions, removing the gross tonnage one-time vessel upgrade, and with the addition of removing the horsepower provision. So I wanted to bring that forward. The committee didn't take that up, but I think it's more because they didn't have time.
Thank you, Tom. David.
The proposed action involves, as you stated, removal of the one-time upgrade restriction, and there are three reasons for that, and they sound very good. Provide more flexibility and fairness, streamline the replacement process, and it'll have a negligible impact to harvest capacity. But I'm trying to reconcile that particular proposed action and those benefits with a point that is made in the baseline working group white paper that has been provided to us, that October 18, 2011 paper, where on page 9, under the section ownership caps, maybe I'm misunderstanding something, but anyways, in that section it says that the vessel upgrade restrictions can maintain fleet diversity and prevent consolidation to some degree. Then it goes on from there. So I look at that, and I'm wondering, how does this comport with the council's decision so far, the Groundfish Committee's work on ownership caps, on trying to maintain fleet diversity and on trying to prevent, you know, some excessive consolidation. That gives me a reason to pause and to doubt that your proposed action has the benefits that you, well, it has the benefits you suggest, but there's some consequences here that run contrary to what we're trying to accomplish through Groundfish. So.
Mike?
Thank you. Just real briefly to Dr. Pierce. I understand your point. I think that there's a difference between the removing all baseline restrictions, which could have implications for consolidation and increases in fishing power, and the one-time upgrade that has been in place. If we start with the premise that the council's original perspective was that a 10% increase in vessel size or 20% increase in horsepower was acceptable and would not compromise fleet diversity or lead to consolidation, then the issue becomes, should it matter whether a vessel is upgraded from 70 feet to 72 feet and then later to 76 if the 10% is allowable versus a vessel that in their first and only upgrade went from 70 to 77? Because the situation that we have now is that some vessels are availing themselves of their full 10% upgrade with their one-time upgrade, and many other vessels were not upgraded to the full capacity, and new owners are potentially hamstrung by business decisions that were made by prior owners that did not take full advantage of those upgrades. And so we're trying to essentially level the playing field for everybody and allow them to take full advantage of that 10% upgrade, assuming, of course, that the council's original analysis that that 10% upgrade was appropriate still stands.
Okay, thank you, Michael. That's helpful. So obviously, if this omnibus amendment goes forward as proposed, there'll be a great deal of discussion, critique, analysis related to fleet diversity and consolidation issues. Right. I see a nodding of a head. Okay.
Mary Beth.
I think the process and timeline looks fine, and you should move forward. But one thing I would just note is we had a presentation on implementing the U.S. Coast Guard Safety Act this morning, and unfortunately ran out of time to ask questions. But one of the things that's going to move forward are what is called alternative safety compliance programs. And this is going to affect, you know, a large majority of vessels in the Northeast because our fleet is old. And anything over 25 years old would all automatically fall into this category. And as vessels age to that 25 going into the future, they lose any grandfathered clause that they might be able to get under with. And, I mean, stability is going to be a huge issue. There's going to be all kinds of issues that come up as these programs move forward. And the need to modify vessels and change over time is coming. So I just kind of throw that out there for people to think about. I don't think there's much you can do about something that hasn't happened yet, and we just deal with what we know today.
Is there further council discussion? Are there any comments from the audience? Ted, Gary?
I appreciate the work on this and the fact that we're finally looking at this. It's been a subject of conversation for a while. I would suggest that there's probably a split between the small boat fleet and the large boat fleet that probably isn't getting sufficiently considered. Being from the monkfish fishery and the skate fishery, we're predominantly small boat. Another way to look at this question and the economics of the equation is, if you have I'm thinking of a kid in Saconnet who has a 31-foot monkfish boat he just bought with great history. To be able to go up to 34 feet doesn't really mean much. Going from 70 to 77 may be significant for that size class of boat. If you're going to spend $150,000 or $200,000 or $250,000, there's really no point to spend that to go from 31 feet to 34 or from 37 to 41. And so I think at the lower end, below 50 foot, say, you might want to be looking at 20% or 25% on horsepower and length, certainly, or more on horsepower. I completely agree with Terry on horsepower. You're spending $40,000 to $60,000 anyway on an engine. You got a 400 horsepower engine, you're going to go to 480. I mean, first of all, it limits the number of engines you can look at even, because you got to have an engine that fits that narrow little window. And it's got to fit your boat, too. So I think what may work for a size class consideration from 50 to 80 feet isn't going to work. And when you're talking in terms of percentages for 30 to 40 feet, and we just talked about observer coverage and paying for that. And if you lock a guy into a 31-foot boat, how is he ever going to pay for an observer? How is he going to afford that if you limit his ability to grow? And how is he going to get good crew? Because now we don't bring in the wings only. We bring in the bodies. About 10 years ago, I started hustling bodies to lobster boats. Now I have a standing order for every body I can bring in from a crab boat. Other guys in the harbor are doing the same thing. So now you're not just bringing in 4,000 pounds of wings. You're also bringing in about 4,000 pounds of bodies. Plus, you're bringing in your monk. And now if you've got groundfish days like I do, you want to bring in 1,000 pounds of dogs. The management plans put us into little boxes, and we got small to survive. But now the management plan is saying, if you're smart, you better get out of that box and get diversified. But your boat and this 10% upgrade is limiting your ability to diversify and provide for your future. And I think this impacts the small boats significantly. And, another way to look at it is if someone said you can spend $200,000 on your house, but you can only put in a study or you can only add a garage, you probably wouldn't spend that money because, what's the point? That's what we're doing to these small boats. We're saying you can get another boat, but you can't appreciably change your business model. And so you're dooming people to not survive. I agree with getting rid of the one-time upgrade. But I think for small boats, you got to look at 20 or 25%, or you're dooming these people to go out of business when we finally figure out the observer issue. And you're going to make them put too much weight on the boat, and then ultimately they're just not going to be able to compete and survive. Crew are very good at figuring out which boats can bring in the most fish and the most money. Good crew gravitates to the boats that can do that, and it becomes a function of size. So I really urge you to give this full consideration and think about the small boat fleets, because our considerations are very different than a larger boat. And when you're working on percentages, it skews very, very differently once you get below 50 feet. So I'd urge you to give that due consideration.
Gary.
Gary Hatch, I'll say it mean. Another thing with this is now that we've sort of gone the way we have with our groundfish, I can say for myself, I got caught in the split permit category where the permit that really set the baseline for the permit itself wasn't the boat that the permit was on at the time that the National Marine Fisheries set up permit applications. So consequently, couldn't afford the boat that set the criteria for the permit, so now I'm stuck with a little boat with a big boat permit that I can't do anything with. And now with the way that we've gone with the groundfish, I can lease the days to a big boat, but I can't fish it on a big boat that I own. So I think, that's a crucial thing that I think we should at least set the baseline for our permits on the size of the boat that the permit that made the history was set at. That would save, it would save me a lot of money because now I either got to buy a bigger boat or just fish with a small boat and have the quota that, I really probably could support a big boat with. All the things that would fall in place with that, as the fellow before us said. You've got crew. Well, who wants to go to George's in a 50-foot boat in the middle of January when you could go on a 77-foot boat? So I think this shows some promise, even though I have my reservations about some of it. I really think we should entertain this. Thank you.
Are there any further comments from the audience? Back to the council. Seeing none, Melissa, have you heard what you need to know this afternoon?
Yes, well, I guess we could. I'm not certain if I should be showing up at committee meetings this fall with this presentation as well, with these alternatives, or if you want to talk further about the timeline and the best time to get on the committee agendas and which committees.
Yeah, why don't you follow through with Tom? Thank you for your presentation. Tom. Here, we're finally to priorities.
So, I think I know.